Wolf Spirit Radio.
I cannot be silent.
Back when Eisenhower was the president, golf courses is where most of his time was spent. So I never really listened to what the president said, because in general I believed that the general was politically dead. But he always seemed to know when the muscles were about to be flexed. Because I remember him saying something, mumbling something about a military industrial complex.
As I have walked among the desperate, rejected, and angry young men, I have told them that Molotov cocktails and rifles would not solve their problems. I have tried to offer them my deepest compassion while maintaining my conviction that social change comes most meaningfully through nonviolent action. But they asked, and rightly so, what about Vietnam? They asked if our own nation wasn't using massive doses of violence to solve its problem, to bring about the changes it wanted. Their questions hit home, and I knew that I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed and the ghetto without having first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government. For the sake of those boys, for the sake of this government, for the sake of the hundreds of thousands trembling under our violence, I cannot be silent.
Each one, reach one, each one.
I cannot be silent.
Nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. Everyone must play a part. Everyone got to go to work. Work for peace. Spirit said work.
I cannot be silent.
Empowering the body, mind, and spirit. This is We Cannot Be Silent with Phil Rossino and Larry Pinckney.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the February edition of We Cannot Be Silent. My name is Phil Rossino, and I co-host the show with Larry Pinckney. And Larry and I tonight are very excited. We have a guest, author and activist, Jill Dalton, out of New York City. And the program tonight is a two-hour live call-in program. And if you folks listening have not made your way to the chat room, please go to wolfspiritradio.com and click on the button for the chat room, and there you can exchange comments with others and pose questions. And there's also a call-in number, and that number is area code 775-657-5973. And tonight is Monday night, 18 February 2013, and this is We Cannot Be Silent with Phil Rossino and Larry Pinckney. Larry, are you there?
I am indeed, and it's good to be hearing your voice. Of course, I hear it all the time. and I want to say thank you to Dave, who, without whom we would not have this show. And also, I certainly am very, very appreciative to our audience. We hope that you will be participating with us, not just listening, but participating. Oh, by the way, remember the donate button. Okay, folks. So we keep this show going. So when you that donate button, use it. Okay. And our special guests. I'm going to turn that back over so you can tell us a bit about, tell the audience, tell us a bit about our guests.
That's right. Thank you, Larry. And this is a listener-supported program, as Larry just mentioned. So if you can help, please do. There's a button on the site, wolfspiritradio.com. Tonight we're thrilled to have as our guest Jill Dalton. And I'm just going to read right from the bio I have here for Jill. Jill Dalton is a recovering Army brat, writer, performer, who has appeared in film and television, as well as performing her solo plays in New York and around the country. Most recently, she can be seen in and consulted for William Hurt on the HBO film Too Big to Fail, about the global financial meltdown. Her articles have been published on Dandelion Salad, reader-supported news, op-ed news, Progressive Activist Voice, and Nation of Change. Jill also has a blog that's worth looking into. It's recoveringarmybrat.wordpress.com. I guess there's a triple W, Jill, before recovering Army brat?
Yes.
Okay. And not only does Jill write a blog, but she also is an author and has written a book that's available on Amazon.com called Is It Fascism Yet? And I believe that came out in 2012, Jill?
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, good. Well, for those of the listeners who are just tuning in for the first time, you might be able to tell by now I am not a professional radio broadcaster. My name is Phil Restino, and I got into this as far as becoming involved with Veterans for Peace in 2005 as a chapter coordinator here in Central Florida. And that was, I wanted to get involved to try to stop these wars, these 9/11 wars mm-hmm. that are still going right now. And a few years after that, in 2011, I came to know Larry Pinkney, who got quite the story himself. He's a veteran of the Black Panther Party, was a political prisoner in some of the toughest prisons out west, for 10 years. And has been a lifelong activist for peace and social justice ever since. Larry's got a great archive of writing himself at blackactivistwg.org/blog. And he's got writings going back to 1968. So I encourage folks to check out Larry there. And he does also produce a weekly column for two publications, The Black Commentator, with his columns called Keeping It Real with Larry Pinkney, and he also does a column on Intrepid Report, intrepidreport.com and blackcommentator.com. So that's just to bring the folks up to speed as far as who we are. And as I mentioned, we have a special guest tonight, Jill Dalton, and I became aware of Jill Dalton only recently because there's an article going around on the internet that she penned, and it is getting a lot of attention on the internet. It's being picked up all over the place. The title of the article is NDAA Hedges v. Obama, Did the Bill of Rights Die Today? And I think this is a good time to turn it over to Jill. Jill, if you want to tell the audience a little bit more about yourself that we may have missed, and then perhaps get into the article you just put out and where you were coming from with that and the concerns you had in order to get you to write the article in the first place. So, Jill, welcome to the program, and I'll shut up and let you speak a little bit.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I got to listen to your interview as well as Larry's interview on Cindy's Soapbox. So today I listened to those. I had actually heard Larry's a week or so ago, so it's really nice to be here and to actually meet both of you. A little bit about myself. Well, I'm an Army brat. My dad was a lifetime, you know, Army officer. He was a colonel, and he served in three wars. He was in World War II, and then he was in Korea and served in Vietnam. And during Vietnam, once he left, it's when I, you know, basically I came of age and I went to college and all hell broke loose, and it was 1968 and the world changed. And, you know, it's like I was just awakened, and with everything that was going on, I became very active anti-war protester. And so by the time my father got home from Vietnam, it was just like our family divided along political lines, and that war, it not only destroyed the country, which it really did, but it destroyed our family pretty much. And because, you know, it was just not a good thing. But, you know, and then I kind of, you know, after Kent State and everything, I kind of went back to sleep. I mean, I got married, I had a life, I moved to New York, I became an actor, and I really went back to sleep until George Bush was elected and the wars, and it just, you know, everything changed, and I could see that our country was just, you know, had been taken over by corporate forces, and the way we were headed was just so misguided and out of touch, and military-industrial complex and prison-industrial complex, all these corporate forces taken over everything. And I, you know, but not many people around me were thinking about these things. I mean, people didn't like Bush and, you know, would go to the big anti-war rallies here in New York City. I found a couple people that I could meet up with and go to the rallies with and stuff, but not much was really, I don't know, people, at least in my immediate circle. I started with Edges, and that's when I realized, you know, I wasn't crazy. That stuff that was going on, I felt, was, you know, just reading him just lifted the veil for me. And then I started following Chris Hedges. You know, I would read anything that he wrote, and then I realized he was going to be, when the whole Occupy, this is actually before Occupy happened, but I knew that he was going to be at a rally. This meltdown, I guess, the global meltdown. When that happened, I said to myself, we are in so much deep doo-doo that, I mean, and I just started following it like I would follow, you know, and read about it, hear about it. And that's when I got in the HBO with William Hurt, and he was playing Hank Paulson. So it was just so strange that I was so interested in this, and I happened to get this job working with him and doing research, helping him, you know, do the whole timeline of the meltdown and everything. And I just, you know, the more I learned, the more I studied, I just became more and more upset by everything that I was learning that was going on. And then Chris Hedges really became a mentor to me. You know, I met him, I went to one of the rallies, and I met him, and I talked to him, and then I went to another, he was giving a talk at the Culture Project here in New York, and I went to hear him speak, and, you know, I asked him if, I told him my book, Is It Fascism Yet?, and, you know, I sent him a copy of it, and then, you know, I just started writing blogs a couple of years ago. My first one was Is It Fascism Yet? And then this whole NDAA, which really came to the attention because, you know, it's not covered in the regular media at all. But because I followed Chris Hedges so closely, and when I started hearing about this and reading about this, I mean, this is really, I mean, they've done so much to take away our civil liberties, but this is really bringing us to a place of a police state where we'll be ruled by the military. We won't even have due process. They can, you know, because this particular, I mean, the NDAA comes out every year, and it's National Defense Authorization Act. And Congress votes on it, and it's, you know, how we give money to the military and figure out the budget and different things. But what happened on New Year's Eve of 2011, Obama signed this NDAA into law, but there was other restriction that's 1021B2, which yep. allows the military to arrest any U.S. citizen without probable cause and throw them into prison indefinitely or till the end of hostilities, which in our permanent war culture would mean forever. And so this kills the First Amendment, and it also kills the Fifth Amendment. I mean, we don't even have any Bill of Rights anymore except for the Second Amendment and the Third Amendment. But so I just started reading everything I could about it and following it. And because it's not being covered on the media, because the media is corporately operated,
right.
Most people have no idea anything's even going on. When I talk to people about it or they tell me how much they like Obama, I say, well, what do you think about the NDAA? And they have no idea what it is. And it's people are, you know, I'm talking to some smart people, but they're so unaware of what's going on. And even if they say, then I tell them about it or what. I mean, I've had people tell me that I was making it up. And I said, Google it.
Right.
Just Google it. Don't listen to me. I don't care. But that's the scariest part to me, is that we have no, it's about silencing information. So people,
yes.
the information can't even get out. And so, you know, I think I told you, Phil, when we were talking that I had this dream about my father. And he was in his uniform and we were walking. This is a couple years ago, and I was saying to him, is this really true? Has this really happened to this country? Have we been completely taken over by forces? And he said, yes, and you need to speak out. And so that's when I thought, oh, my gosh, my father speaks to me from the grave, so I better
I better
speak out because
yes.
I better listen. So, yeah. You know, and I mean, so many crazy things are happening under Obama. And, you know, people, he has silenced. He's, like I said in the article, he's the, Glenn Ford calls him, the more effective evil because, he silenced the left. He silenced the anti-war movement, silenced, Americans.
Yes, thank God you listened to your dad in the dream. I'm sorry for interrupting, but
no, that's good.
And
please interrupt.
Yes, speaking, Dave, I don't know if you can hear us, and Larry, you might be able to give us feedback on this. Does Jill's audio sound a little garbled on your end?
Larry? I can hear her very well.
Okay, but it was clear. There wasn't, it didn't sound garbled at all at times.
No, I can,
okay,
I can
thank
hear
you.
Quite
that might be my earphones then.
No, it's the Skype connection. Because she's been
Skype.
Coming through clear all the way.
Oh, great. Okay. I just wanted to, question that now in case it was happening and we needed to fix it. Thanks, Dave. Well, Jill, in your article, once again, the title of it is NDAA, Hedges v. Obama, Did the Bill of Rights Die Today? And I noticed the, what you just said, that there was a lack of coverage by any of the corporate media, and this is what we've found, we have to be the media ourselves, and I'm so
yeah.
glad that there's people like yourself who are able to write and get this information across in a way where people can read it and get it. We're so happy this article was written and it's making its rounds. And you wrote here, Obama is a brand, and I believe he was put into office to do what no Republican could ever get away with. He's the kindler, gentler face of corporate empire. Here we have a president who's much worse than Bush in so many ways. Obama's extended the wars, created new wars, extended the Bush tax cuts for the rich, gave additional bailout money to the banks, allowed the health insurance industry to write the health care bill, extended the Patriot Act, escalated drone attacks 6 times more frequently than Bush, and prosecuted twice as many whistleblowers under the Espionage Act of 1917 as all other presidents combined. Obama has assassinated 3 U.S. citizens without due process and now wants to carry this draconian power out at home, and to that end signed the NDAA into law, and amazingly still finds time to ruminate over his kill list on Terror Tuesdays. This is all real, and people, like you mentioned, don't have a clue. And, and as you mentioned, he's been able to do what no Republican could ever get away with. And this is where, we've been finding the conditioning of, the American people to be loyal to one team or another, you know, this partisan, you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, and if the other side's for it, we need to be against it without even looking into whatever it is. And, and he has been able to, get away. Well, the powers that be have been able to continue and further agenda by putting this fella in, because they decide who's president, and they play us off each other for hundreds of years now. And, but we're waking up to it, thank God, you know, and I guess it's taken in something as serious as a president being able to have kill lists for Americans to wake us up. Hopefully it doesn't have to get worse than that. I'd like to bring in Larry on this, because like you, Jill, Larry caught this NDAA thing and got concerned just like you did, and he's a writer himself and started writing about this as well. Larry, can you chime in a bit here and give us your take on the NDAA and how it concerned you, and what you think we need to do about it?
Well, first of all, once again, I'd like to thank you, Jill, for being on being with us this evening on the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Really appreciate having you. As far as the NDAA, and quite frankly, as far as Obama, who's really a Trojan horse for the corporation, the corporate military elite in this country. I've been writing about this since 2007, prior to Obama, when Obama was in fact an aspiring, quote unquote, U.S. presidential candidate, trying to play the role of Paul Revere, as it were, or Christmas Addict, to sound the alarm. And sure enough, the very things that I predicted unfortunately came to pass. In an article that I wrote back in 08, the article was entitled "An Obama Presidency, More of the Same, Only Worse." I actually predicted that these things were going to come about. And sadly, when I say these things, I'm talking about these draconian, Orwellian, fascistic actions that Obama has taken. But it really didn't take a rocket scientist to see it. It was pretty obvious that the guy was being brought in using the Trojan horse divide and conquer, first surprise and then divide and conquer tactic. And now we're in a situation where, as you mentioned, Jill, people were put to sleep. As a matter of fact, they were snoring, figuratively speaking. And we are in a situation where our backs are not merely up against the wall. We're being plastered in the wall. And we're having to euphemistically remove the bricks to get out of the wall, euphemistically, in terms of awakening, waking folks up, waking ourselves up, and then waking each other up. It's sort of like the building, the nation, if you will, is on fire. And, in a very real sense, from the NDAA, and I think it's really important that the audience realize that this is real. We're not talking about something that might come about. We're talking about the fact that these things are already here and in place. Back in the 60s, in the 1960s, there was, and prior, in the 50s and 60s and 70s, there was something called COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program. And it was, at that time, illegal for the FBI and CIA and other agencies of the government and police, local, state, federal police, as it were, to engage in these activities. Nevertheless, they did it, and they did it under the auspices of COINTELPRO. Now, thanks to the NDAA and Mr. Obama and his ilk, these things have actually been codified, if you will, into law. Into law. So the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence have all been, in essence, made null and void. And what we have to do is to be persistent and consistent in waking our fellow sisters and brothers of all colors, black, white, brown, red, yellow. We have to be persistent and consistent in awakening them. We must wake them up. We must wake them up. We need to understand that the NDAA, the so-called National Defense Authorization Act, is really just another nail in the coffin of human rights, in the coffin of civil liberties, the coffin. It's being buried. And, you know, Jill, I was listening to you very closely when you said that, you know, some people would imply or actually say that you were making these things up. Well, it does sort of sound like science fiction. It really does. I mean, people have also said that to me. They have said, oh, Larry, it can't be that bad. And I replied, not only is it that bad, it's actually much worse. And they're dumbfounded when I send them the information. They're just dumbfounded. But the good thing is, as you said, Phil, and as you also said, Jill, both of you, that, you know, we are beginning to get the information out. Phil, you said that we have to be our own media. You know, that might not be a bad, you know, that's not a bad idea. We should have been our own media decades ago. We damn well better be our own media now, because the corporate stream media, as I refer to it, will never do anything but be the propaganda arm for whom? For the corporate military elite. I mean, that's, and we're in danger. We are in danger. Instead of the British coming, we're talking about fascism being here in a very, very real sense. You know, so I'm going to, that's where I'm coming from as far as NDAA, drone missiles, the kill list. We're talking straight extrajudicial murder,
folks.
Imagine the chief executive with the self-appointed ability, self-prescribed, if you will, ability and capability to murder at will. No judicial process, nothing. Can murder you. I wrote a piece in Intrepid Report, something, I think it was entitled something like NDAA kill and kill list. Are you on it? And I was very serious about it, because not only are people being killed, but we really honestly don't even know, and I'm talking about U.S. citizens. No one should be being killed, citizen or not. Certainly not without judicial process. Certainly not without that at the bare minimum. But we do not even know, because there is nothing compelling Obama and his cronies to tell folks who is being hit. We've got a mafia here. It's a corporate military mafia, let's be honest. That's what we're dealing with, and it's being codified into law. So that's where I'm coming from. What are your thoughts on that, Jill?
Well, I mean, I think you're absolutely right, and something that really scares me is that when this case came up, and Judge Catherine Forrest, who is a district judge in New York, ruled back in May that this was, that the NDAA was unconstitutional, period. And then, you know, they knew that it was going to be appealed, but they were shocked that it was like immediately the Obama White House and the Department of Justice went in there and they got an injunction. This was on a Friday afternoon that she made that ruling, and they came in on Friday afternoon and they got it into an appeals court on Monday morning, and they put a stay on this to put this back on the books immediately. And my feeling is because this is already being used, and so they have to make these illegal things legal, just like, I mean, I sort of see it like Weimar Germany in the 30s, you know, and Hitler,
yes,
before Hitler comes into power, and everything is falling apart, and the government isn't working, and the people are asleep, and you know, the German people say, well, how could the Germans allow Hitler to murder all the Jews? But I feel like it's the same thing over here. Many people are asleep, and our civil liberties are being taken away one at a time, and that's what they do. They take one and they go, oh, nobody said anything. Okay,
yes,
let's take another.
Yes.
Oh, and they just keep pushing and pushing and pushing, because the corporate elite, they know things are going to collapse. I mean, they are hollowing the country out from the inside with everything. You know, they're stealing whatever they can steal. It's stealing the money, trying to frack everything so that the water is going to be polluted. I mean, it's environmental as well as our, you know, civil liberties, and it's the whole system is so corrupt and so rotten, and they know it, and something's going to happen. I mean, they shut down Occupy because Occupy spoke the truth, and regular people were waking up and, you know, taking their kids down to Zuccotti Park on Saturdays, you know, and they couldn't have that, and they shut it all down. Also, it was election year, and they, you know, they had to get rid of it because they didn't answer any of the demands. They just simply shut everything down. So I believe it is fascism. It's, you know, when corporations and government work together, according to Mussolini, you know, that's the definition,
right,
of fascism. And that's what we have. That's what we,
mm-hmm,
our laws are written by corporate lobbyists. And then, you know, people are paid off. Nothing is done for the American people. I don't know how far people have to be pushed. That's what I don't understand. You know, what has to happen, before, but something will tip and something will, you know, it could be something very innocuous, but something will happen. And I think they know that, and that's why they want to put all these, laws in place. And now there's like 160 police agencies that have applied for drone permits in our country.
Yes.
And the police departments are militarized. I mean, they're ready.
Yeah. And this is history repeating itself. I mean, you mentioned Germany in the 30s, Jill, and it's almost right out of the textbook, you know, play by play. And shame on us if we let this happen again. those of us who recognize it know better.
Yeah.
And you wrote also in your article, is the American public willfully ignorant or just ignorant? Now, ignorant is just not knowing something. Willfully ignorant is having it presented to you and then pushing it away. You know, and then you wrote, or as a friend of mine told me when we were arguing over Mr. Obama and his policies, well, I don't want to know. I'm happy with my little life, and I know I'll just be depressed. And then you connected that with perhaps that was the same logic that the Germans used as Hitler came to power and began systematically stripping away civil liberties and silencing all dissent. And you wondered how the Germans could remain silent with all that transpired, but now you see it happening here in the U.S., and you, as you said, you're truly amazed and pissed off by our complicity in this corruption. Yeah, and by our complicity in this corruption, and it is on us.
We've allowed it to happen.
Exactly. And Larry said before that we've got to wake these people up. We've got to wake these people up to save our own asses, you know?
That's right.
Not just to do something nice for them. To save our own asses, we've got to wake people up. And I know that we've been on for a while now, 35 minutes, and I did want to mention to folks listening announce once again the call-in number. If anyone listening wants to call in and talk to Jill, Larry, or myself, ask a question or offer some comments, the number is area code 775-657-5973. Again, that's 775-657-5973, and someone will be on the other end of the phone and should patch it through to us. I believe that our biggest threat, my own belief here, is our biggest threat to our way of life, our security, our freedom, is our own stubborn political partisan loyalties. And because the answer is gotta come from us, we the people. And as Larry says, black, white, red, yellow, brown, I get it mixed up every time, Larry. I'm sorry, but all of us.
All people, it doesn't matter.
All of us. That's the answer. And as long as we're still playing this, Democrat, Republican thing, it's on us. It's our complicity. And, Frederick Douglass, the African American, statesman, one of his famous quotes is, "Power concedes nothing without a demand. Never has and never will." And that's one of those universal truths. And you mentioned, Jill, they take away one and they see, hey, was there any opposition to this? No. Okay, let's try for another one. And that's what's been going on here. And, you know, they ain't gonna all of a sudden have an epiphany change their way. These are the same cats that have been running things since Jesus kicked over the tables in the temple. Who won that battle? I mean, who got nailed? Nailed up on the cross? It wasn't the money changers, you know. And if you do follow the money through these parties and up through to where the money's actually coming from, you'll find these folks are the same folks. They've been behind every war in history. And we've been at war now, what, with this false flag attack of 9/11. My God, people. Again, this is on us too. You know, anyone with one eyeball and two live brain cells to look, rub together looks at, any one of these videos on 9/11, you know, and you watch these buildings come down, three buildings, two airplanes, perfectly symmetrical collapses. Mm-hmm. You have the air defense is standing down, you know, and supposedly a guy in the cave with a beard was able to stand down the NORAD for an hour and a half. Come on, folks. It's 9/11, the whole reason for this war on terror and for this that what's allowed the expansion of the of this executive power, this dictatorship, has because we haven't dealt with it honestly as a country. We still haven't gotten real about 9/11. All this is in the name of 9/11, and they're just going to keep taking and taking until we say no. And I just went off on a rant. Larry will tell you this happens from time to time, but but you know, we've got to stop worrying about what are people going to think, you know, and it's too far gone to, you know, we're too far gone to be worrying about that crap, man. We got to stand up and as Larry's column says, get real. And well, again, I'm ranting. So any one of you want to jump in or ring up the phone, please do.
let me throw this out too, Phil and Jill. I think that it's important to take our own narrative. In other words, by that, I mean that the corporate government, all right, the corporate military elite, okay, the bloodsuckers that actually run and control this nation and the world, frankly, globally, they have a narrative. They have a story that they put across. Mm-hmm. That's why they've got their propaganda arm, which is the corporate stream media, ABC, NBC, mm-hmm. CBS, you name it, even PBS, yes, folks, okay?
Yes.
They're all part of that corporate media, okay? They put across their narrative. Going back to what you had said earlier, Phil, we must be our own media. We must, mm-hmm. in fact, claim and reclaim our people, everyday people's narrative, our story, our narrative, and the hell with their narrative. We know that their narrative is an agenda, and it's full of lies and distortions. How else can they control us, divide us, and manipulate us, okay? They tell the truth. They know they're in deep, deep manure, all right? So the other thing I want to say very quickly is that let us understand that this so-called war on terror is, in fact, not a war on terror. It is a war of terror against the people of this nation and the people of the world. For example, yes. The drone missiles slamming down on the people of Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, Bahrain, Libya, Somalia. It's an endless list. This is a war of terror against... Yes. The people of the world and the people of this nation. And it's both physical and psychological.
Yes,
so it's a weapon of, these are weapons of terror. Terror weapons are not only physical, but they're also psychological. And, mm-hmm. you know, Obama is being used quite, and willingly, I might add. He knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly mm-hmm. who he's serving. And it is not the people. It is not the people. It is the same corporate military elite interests that the previous regime, the G.W. Bush regime, the Clinton regime, the George H. Bush regime, all of these regimes serve the same masters. But we've gotten to a point now where we will not survive unless we take action collectively as a people. And in order to do that, we've got to reclaim the narrative. take it back and give our own narrative. You know, so I just, and you know, I just wanted to say those 2 points about the war of terror against us, because that's what it is. So we must therefore ask ourselves, who are the real terrorists? It's pretty obvious when you start using that noggin, as they say in Espanol, you know, use your cabeza. Use your brain, use your head. Okay?
Well, that's why they don't want schools. You know, that's why they want to privatize the school and just have people learn tests, because they don't want people that can think, that can connect the dots. Once you can connect the dots, you can't control people. So they want to privatize the school, and you just learn by rote, and you answer these questions, and, you know, you're just a cog in their machine. But something that you said, Larry, when you were talking about, you know, we have to be our own media, I was thinking, you know, in the 60s, we had the music, and the musicians woke people up. At least that was, I believe, my awakening, was all the musicians, and they were singing about it, and it was the rock and roll. It seems like now it's got to be us, the bloggers, the people who are writing about it, the people, your radio show. It is. We have to be our own media, because the other, we have no voice there. I mean, we have no... No, nothing. I mean, MSNBC, Fox, all of them are propaganda arms of the corporate state. And but the New York Times did cover the NDAA. I have to say that they did, because even though they too are corporate, they at least understand the real ramifications of what this is. But for the most part, you know, it's just. You know, it's just silence.
Right.
So, but, and also these wars that have been going on for over 10 years, they are bringing the wars home. They've been, you know, perfecting their techniques, their torture, their renditions, their, you know, all this stuff. And they're just bringing it home, and will be another sacrifice zone. They're just, it is science fiction. It really is.
And it can happen here. It is
happening here.
It is happening here. It still kills me every day I wake up knowing that we're slaughtering people all around the world.
I know.
And I know that, but a lot of people don't. And you mentioned back in the Vietnam era, there was music that wasn't totally owned. The media was not owned by five mega corporations as it is today.
Came into your living room every night.
Exactly. We don't have that now. They learned a lot from Vietnam, which was to buy it all up and totally control the narrative, as Larry said. And that's why
there's no draft.
Yes.
They learned.
They don't need a conscription now. You know, they have an economic draft. And they use this media to, call these soldiers heroes, heroes, heroes. And they're at every baseball game, every football game halftime show. And what that does is the old, again, this play is as old as time. You know, question the war. You're questioning our troops. You're dishonoring our troops, and that's why they put this indefinite detention provision in the NDAA. The NDAA is the National Defense Authorization Act, which comes due every year, and it funds the military. And if you got the military that's engaged in war, and you vote against this bill, even though they threw this other stuff in it, the first thing that gets thrown at you if you're a congressman or a senator trying to stand up against it is you're not supporting our troops. You're withholding valuable resources that can jeopardize their safety in battle. You know. And,
meanwhile, we're privatizing the army and using mercenary soldiers more and more. So it's not even our truth. I mean, it's just so twisted.
It's sick. It's sick. It's disgusting. These are mercenaries. You know, we're still spending the same money in Iraq, and I don't know that for a fact. We're still spending a heck of a lot of money in Iraq with these mercenaries, private contractors. You know, I don't know what happened. I have a feeling all those military bases that they constructed there are still there, you know.
They built the largest military base in the world there.
Yeah, bigger than the Vatican. Sorry.
And it's filled with mercenary, with mercenary soldiers. I mean, Blackwater, which was renamed XE and now has been renamed something else again because, Prince, the guy who owns and operates it, he is like a Christian fundamentalist and he wants to kill Muslims and that's his whole vision. I mean, they had to get him out of the country because of everything that was going on with that guy and with Blackwater and what's going on over there. I mean, it's slaughter. And
yes, in our name, on our watch, and on our watch, you know. And we're coming up a few more minutes before we take the break at 58 past the hour. We still have time for a call if anyone wants to call into the program. Once again, that number is 775-657-5973. That's 775-657-5973. You mentioned, just to get back for people who may not know what you're referring to with this lawsuit, Hedges v. Obama, in the title. Mm-hmm. This indefinite detention provision, section 1021 of the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act. What had happened was early in January of 2012, this, again, as you mentioned, it was signed into law on New Year's Eve, December 31, Saturday night, December 31, 2011, by President Obama.
Yeah.
What had happened was in early January, journalist Chris Hedges, whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg from the Pentagon Papers, Tangerine Boland from Revolution Truth, author Noam Chomsky, and then Birgitta John's daughter.
Pardon me just a minute. The caller from the 228 area, turn down your speakers.
Oh, okay. Just a moment.
Sounds like we have a caller. I just wanted to name the people that were involved.
I know, but he's interrupting the show.
Yeah, I want to make a call into the show.
You are. Now turn your speakers down or I'm going to kick you back out.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like we have a caller, and I just wanted to bring the attention to what that suit was that Chris Hedges leads the group there. Caller, welcome to the show.
Would you give us your first name and the city you're calling from, please?
Yeah, I'm Tom, and I'm calling from Biloxi, Mississippi.
Well, welcome, Tom. Glad to have you call in. What do you have to say?
Well, I'm a good friend of Jill, and she's a blogging companion, and I totally agree with what you're talking about on the show. I mean, I can't find any differences at all. I hope that perhaps in the second part of the show you might be able to discuss some potential remedies. That's one of the things that we have also focused on. We can agree that we have a corrupt political system. The two-party system is totally corrupt, and it's not going to elect people, you know, through voting process really remedy the situation. I mean, we have corporatism that's run amok. I mean, totally amok, and it controls everything that we have. So I'd like you to discuss, if you can, some potential remedies, and you know, in particular, we have a president who is corporately owned and controlled by the corporatists, and he's basically carrying out their wishes and using all kinds of diversionary tactics to make it happen, and he's been very successful at it. I kind of compare him with the Elmer Gantry of politics. So I hope you'll be able to talk about that a bit, maybe.
Yes, I thank you so much, Tom. I'm hoping we could do that during the second half of the program. You know, we've definitely spent the first half identifying what we have on our plate here, and next is what can we do about it. And I know we're coming up on the break in a couple of minutes. Did you have anything else you wanted to say, Tom, or ask?
No, I don't think so. I really like the way the discussion is going. You know, it seems to be flowing well, and everybody's contributing, and, you know, there seems to be a common agreement, and I think you probably have a lot of listeners who also agree, who think that, you're really, you're talking about the key issues and what, you know, the key problems, so to speak, and, you know, we have to get to a point somewhere soon where we talk about, you know, how do we solve the problem? Do we have a revolution? Maybe that's necessary, you know, because there are some people that think we need one. And but the question is whether or not you can have a peaceful revolution or not, or whether it's going to turn violent, because there's going to be large numbers of people that are in dissent here pretty soon, and as soon as they really become aware of everything that's going on. But, you know, as you discussed, creating awareness is a primary problem that we have. I mean, it's very difficult without any aid from the corporate media. You know, they're working against us for everything we try to do, and so we have a huge battle. I mean, you know, it's monumental in many respects, but it's critical, because if we don't fight it and we don't win it, we're all in trouble. It's that simple.
Well, you got that right, Tom, and we're coming up on the break, and thank you so much for calling in, Tom, and we will definitely talk about how we're going to attack this problem. I do want to mention to the listeners, this is a listener-supported program, and we're talking about becoming the media ourselves and saying the hell with the folks that have been lying to us all the time. So I want to encourage folks, if you could, go to wolfspiritradio.com and /wolfchat, and you'll see a donate button. And if you're able to throw these folks, Dave Corso, the proprietor of this network, that we'd really appreciate that. That helps keep these kind of programs on the air. And right now it's 10:58 and time to take a break. Hope to see you back in a few minutes.
I'm posting you on Facebook everywhere I can, okay?
Thank you so much, Tom.
Great. And
thanks for calling, Tom.
You're welcome.
Everybody, welcome back to the second hour of We Cannot Be Silent with Phil Restino and Larry Pinkney. I am Phil Restino, and Larry, you still with us?
Absolutely.
Oh, very good. And for those folks who are just tuning in, we have a special guest with us tonight, author, activist Jill Dalton, out of New York City, and Jill has recently penned an article that's getting a lot of attention on the internet, and that is NDAA Hedges v. Obama, did the Bill of Rights die today? And this has to do with the tyranny that we've allowed take over this country of ours, and how far we've gone. We're talking about a presidency that now can, according to its laws, single out anyone it wants and call them an enemy of the state and basically kill them, you know, without any cause for arrest, any opportunity for defense, no due process. This is just the executive branch of this government has now got itself that much power where it can do this, say they're going to do this openly, and we're still standing here taking it. But not Joe Dalton. Hello. Yes.
Hello. Hi. I'm calling in.
Oh, Dave.
I'm calling in the show. It's Phil's cousin, Janet, from New York. How you doing?
Hi, Janet. We didn't hear the ring.
I got the ring, baby. We're engaged.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's good to hear from you, Janet. I was hoping you'd call in. And during the break, I was telling Larry, who you spoke with last time, and our guest, Jill, who's a fellow New Yorker there. Maybe you'll meet someday and get a coffee.
We may meet up sometime.
Yeah, yeah.
Very cool. It's Phil and Jill.
There you go.
I told Ed about the show, and as a matter of fact, he was just beeping through. You know, Ed, who used to work at Air America.
Yes.
But I'm not going to get confused and take his call as well as talk to you. But he's listening, so that's cool. He's listening, too. Maybe he'll call on the show.
Oh,
yeah.
Great.
Great.
Very, very interesting show tonight. Glad to hear it. I do hope, though, you get back on telling me more about what Chris Hedges, lawsuit, whatever is going on there. I'm not up on all this stuff as much as you are. And speaking of, you know, what's going on in the country, you know, from my point of view, being an artist, one of the things that screws me up is, you know, always looking to pay the rent, survival, not being able to keep up with the news and what's going on as much as I want to. So that's one other thing that's going on, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you wanted to know about the Hedges element of this, Janet.
Yeah, you started to talk about that, and then that phone call came in. So I wish
I'll finish that for you.
Tomsky, et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah. What they did was, right away in early January of 2012, they filed suit against the Obama administration, you know, saying this is unconstitutional, this provision. And it went through the courts, and as Jill mentioned in the first hour, the judge did agree and rule it unconstitutional. And within the same day, the Obama administration lawyers fought it, appealed it, so basically, you know, they're above the law. The presidency's been operating above the law for a very long time now because we've allowed it. We've allowed
it. Well, I mean, can they appeal it? What happened?
Yeah, they are.
Well, Jill, you want to take that? Go ahead, Jill.
Yeah, well, what happened was, so then the lawyers, the lawyers that work for the government and Obama, they took it to the, that very same day that she ruled it unconstitutional, and they got it pulled back into court Monday morning to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, and the appeals court gave it a stay, which meant they put it right back into effect. And so then on February 6th, the plaintiffs were back in the court again in New York, and they had three separate judges listened to everything. Judge Catherine Forrest was not involved in this, and so now they have to wait and see what these judges rule, and if and they may it may go all the way to the Supreme Court is what they're thinking. So right now it's in a holding pattern, but it's still in effect. The NDAA is still in effect.
Right, and that's an important thing. It's still in effect.
Yes.
They didn't like suspend it until there was a judgment on it. So
Because it was signed into law. It is law.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to offer something, introduce something here that, some of y'all may not know about. Larry does because we've had this conversation in the past. And again, Tom, who called in just before the break, asked us to, you know, during the second hour to see what we can do as far as ideas for correcting all this. And I maintain every day I feel even stronger about this, that our biggest problem is our own stubborn political partisanship that we as a people have. And I want to say that not a whole lot of people know this, but the very same week, if not the same day or within a couple of days, Congressman Ron Paul of Texas offered legislation, a simple one-page legislation that would have stricken this section out of the legislation. And this was, as you mentioned earlier, Jill, a presidential election year, 2012. Mm-hmm. And, I believe this, partisan loyalty, you know, we cannot let the other side win an election no matter what, you know. This fellow Ron Paul, congressman, was running for president as a Republican. You see? And he was already, out of all the candidates running for president, be they Republican or Democrat, he was the one who would exercise the power of the presidency, commander-in-chief, to order an immediate halt to the war. Obama can do that right now. Any moment of the day, the president can order a ceasefire. It's been done in the past. So what had happened was, people who were very concerned about this with the Hedges and all them, Noam Chomsky and all that, you know, those are folks that people traditionally on the left will follow, went with that, and there was no attention given to this legislation introduced by Ron Paul, to strike this section. If you strike it out of the bill itself, there's nothing to decide in a court.
Right.
It's gone.
Right.
You strike it. It is no longer law to be challenged. You see?
Right.
And here is where our stubborn political partisanship, totally took that option out of play. And I can tell you right now, there may be people listening tonight that are hearing this for the first time. That's how deep this partisan loyalty runs.
And the irony is let me interject here if I may. The irony is that the partisanship, that is to say Democrat, Republican, is a farce. It is a total farce. Because when it's not about our side, their side, the fact is both parties are really one party.
Yeah.
They do. They're corporate parties. Of course they are. So the game is to keep people divided and controlled. And that's what too many of us have succumbed to. We have succumbed to this scam. It's a scam. And it's worked.
Yeah.
It's old because it has worked. We have got to break through that.
All right, you're saying
is
heads and tails of the same coin. We got to get rid of the coin and get a new coin.
That's right. That's right.
They get rid of the penny. It costs twice as much to make a penny as a penny is worth. So we need new coinage. We got to coin a whole new thing here.
It's us, Janet.
Yeah.
We that are perpetuating this ourselves by nobody knew about that. And all the Occupy and everything, all this with the NDAA, the suit by Hedges and all. I'm curious, Jill, you mentioned you've had correspondence with Chris Hedges. You know, perhaps if you have a line into him, maybe you can ask him, why did they give Ron Paul's legislation any consideration? You know, you see, I believe being involved in the organized anti-war movement in this country as it is since 2005, there are people that would not give a Republican any attention, regardless of, even if it meant stopping the war or eliminating the indefinite detention provision from the law. You know, God forbid you give a, and this is, I know for a fact, because we dealt with the impeachment of Obama issue since 2009, and finally Veterans for Peace did pass the resolution at its national convention in 2011. But what I'm trying to illustrate is the argument, 99.9% of the time, the argument against applying a call for impeachment to Obama for war crimes, as was done for the Republican Bush before him, was they didn't want to have Republicans get in office. That was the argument. That was the argument. So that's how deep this stubborn partisanship runs, where you have an organization that puts itself as out to be nonpartisan, and its primary purpose is to stop the damn wars. When you have something that can stop the damn wars that takes a second seat, when it may offer the possibility of Republicans taking office over Democrats. And as Larry mentioned, and you know, and you mentioned it yourself, Jill, in your article, they're both the same. You know, they're working for the same man. You know, it's a fraud. So that's on us.
But you know what? I was hoping that Romney would win. And I mean, I didn't vote for either one of them. I voted green, but I was hoping Romney would win because I thought maybe then the left would wake up again, the anti-war movement, and people would start raising, you know, holy hell, because we had a Republican in office again. But I knew he wasn't going to win because they had their, got their guy. Why would they want Romney? They got the perfect person to put everybody back to sleep.
That's the whole point of it. Janet, the point is that, and you're absolutely correct, you know, and let's be clear about this. The rank and file, that is to say everyday people, they are the ones we are interested in reaching and making sure are awake. You know what? The leadership of the right, or should I say misleadership of both the right and the so-called left, all right? They're irrelevant. We don't care about the leadership because they're not serving the interests of the rank and file. They're serving the interests of the same corporate masters. And I'm saying it again, and I come out of the left, but I'm saying it like it is. We must serve the people, as we said in the party, body and soul. And that means we have to dispense with this so-called partisanship.
Absolutely. Mm. Right. I agree. I'm trying to do it with my art in various ways as much as possible, while not being propagandistic, you know, kind of a Bob Marley one love, one world, I guess, view, as much as possible. Let me just say this. I had a job. I can't say who I worked for because who the hell knows who's listening. But I do a little part-time job as a political pollster, and I read the questions that, you know, I'm supposed to read. We're calling all over the country, you know, to basically take the pulse and the temperature of whoever it is, whether I'm calling Mississippi or California or anywhere, you know. Whatever, I'm just dialing the numbers, asking the questions, trying to talk to the people and get their opinions for public opinion polls. And some of these questions blew me away. Some of the people's answers blow me away. So as tedious and boring as this job gets as times, I'm thinking, okay, so I'm only making a small amount of money per hour, but I'm getting an education. Excuse me. I'm getting an education while I'm doing this. I'm going to give you one of the most extreme things somebody said to me. Just throwing this out as like a horse of a different color. I call somebody in, was Mississippi or Alabama, really, really thick southern accent. Honestly, I couldn't tell whether it was a man or a woman for quite a while until at some point she laughed and she said, oh, my husband said, you know, just the hell with that or whatever. And there was a question that was about how do you think the war in Afghanistan is going? And this guy, these were two poor people, and the guy was on disability and he was a vet. I can't ask questions, you know, I just ask the question. I can't get into their personal life. She just tells me this. So I'm listening. And the guy says, she don't know how to answer the question about the war in Afghanistan, and he's telling her what he thinks. So she's giving me his answer. I'm hearing this in the speakerphone in the background. And he says, they ought to use the A-bomb on them. Just blow them to shreds. Just the A-bomb. I haven't heard anybody talk about an A-bomb in ages. That's what he wants to do. Okay? So I type in the response. Later on at the end of the questionnaire, they ask, you know, demographics. What's your, you know, income? What kind of phone do you have? What religion are you? Guess what religion they were? They were born again Christians. This guy said, hey, Mom. This was like, you know, yeah. Exactly. That was like, wow, that's
the interview. They're Christian fascists is what they are.
Born again Christians, and he's saying use the A-bomb. And then she's asking me if I can give her advice on how to get their Social Security, that they know, she knows people who are getting it that don't deserve it, but they really do, and you know, they're not getting anywhere with their application. So anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in as a kind of taste of, and one of the questions I had to ask was about should we be using should we be killing U.S. civilians who are suspected of terrorism? So every time I had to answer that question, I emphasized suspected U.S. citizens, suspected, not proven, suspected. Some people answered yes, and you know, I'm like, chills going through my body, and I'm just recording the answers. And you know, I can't show any, you know, bias one way or another. I'm being totally neutral, just recording the answers. But I'm reading the questions in a way to try to get them to think. You know, that's the most I can do.
Yes, and this is how far we are, and so we really have to sound the alarm and shake people out of this, and because we've got a society of repeaters. You know, Jill mentioned the education system, and how you know, people are, the kids are being taught to the test, you know, just to
yeah,
repeat.
Yeah.
You know,
that's big news here in New York lately.
Yeah,
with the Board of,
you know,
yeah.
And yeah. As we mentioned earlier, the different the TV networks where, you know, folks that are part of the Republicans. They call themselves conservatives or Republicans. That team, they turn on the Fox News channel and they plug their brain into that and get their daily download. And folks on the other side will plug into the MSNBC and get their daily download. And the next day they just repeat what they heard. You know, we've got that's how far gone we are. So it's those of us who can still think and see what the heck's going on here. We really need to shake people out of this and educate them. And I did want to say, I don't know if there's other callers. You may get another caller come in, Janet. I don't know, at some point.
Oh yeah, no problem.
You know, but we're enjoying.
So all of a sudden, it was just like I was talking to you on the phone instead of being on the radio.
yeah. Well, that's what we can go too.
To tell you how my cat's doing, you know.
yeah, man. And but I did want to get back to what Tom had asked for before the break, as far as
ideas
for solutions. And Larry and I, this time last year, we had a guest on. This was right after the NDAA was getting people's attention, and there was a group out in Oregon, the Tea Party group, got together with their local Occupy group. Now remember, this is February of 2012. Occupy was still just a few months old, and they got together around this NDAA and came together physically where you can actually reach out and touch them, you know, and talk to them. What they found was there, and Larry says this often, he says the last thing the powers that be want is for us, we the people, to get together and start talking with each other, because we're going to find out that we have a heck of a lot more in common and the same things at stake than we do have as far as differences. And we're going to find out that we've been getting played off each other for years at the expense of our own selves. And so this group really did something there, and it turned into further discussions and further cooperation. And right now we've got a young fella out of Ohio. His name is Dan Johnson, and he's with an organization that he founded called PANDA, People Against the NDAA. And I don't have the website in front of me, but it's People Against the NDAA. Okay. And what he's been doing is
I have the website. It's pandaunite.org.
Oh, great. pandaunite.org. And I spoke with Dan the other night on the phone, and what they've been doing is very much what the folks out in Oregon did a year ago. Try to get the people that are involved with the Occupy and similar groups on the left together with the Tea Party groups and similar groups on the right, and educate them about the NDAA and say, look, you know, let's put our differences on other issues aside, and we all need to come together on this. And what they're doing is they're creating efforts in a number of different states now. He's going beyond that. Uh-huh. And if you do go to what is the site, Jill?
It's pandaunite.org.
pandaunite.org, and I believe there's a button in there where you can find out if there's a coordinator in your own state. And this is something that people are doing. And, so folks are listening, pandaunite.org, and just get involved. And if you're paying attention to this program right now, you know enough. Next step is to get involved. Larry, you mentioned, I don't know if you want to share this with the listeners, but, the time in prison, where it was a lot of killing going on at the time, and somebody approached you for help, and you saw that as you weighed it out as far as differences and benefits. Would you mind giving that example again? Or
Let me give some background if I'm going to mention prison.
Yeah.
I spent 10 years, again, I repeat, I'm a veteran of the Black Panther Party. I spent 10 years in prison. And from prison, I self-authored my case to the United Nations, which took many years. And remember, there was no internet, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow.
And the United Nations finally ruled in my favor. Mind you, both the American and Canadian governments ignored the ruling, even though it was carried all over the world. Now that I've given that background, yes. So during the time that I was in prison, one of the many things that happened was I was approached by a member. In fact, he was one of the leaders of the neo-Nazis. And I don't know what people know about prisons, but prisons are U.S., I call them U.S. gulags, because that's what they are. They're barbaric and sadistic, and everything you can possibly imagine goes on in those prisons every single day. U.S., that's what we're, United States, you know, and the West in general. All right, now, having said that, this young man, neo-Nazi, approached me, which in and of itself was very unusual, and asked for help. I was known as a so-called jailhouse lawyer, among other things, names that I cannot use on the air that the prison official called me. But in essence, he had been charged with an offense in prison, and this happens all the time, and when that happens, your sentence can be extended. In other words, you don't get released on your release date. So it can mean really more prison time, alright? And he said, you know, could I help him? Would I? And I said, I will do this. Now, there were different, what shall we call them? Groups, I think is the word I'll use. There was the so-called Black Guerrilla Front, nothing to do with the Black Panther Party, so don't get confused. Black Guerrilla Front, Mexican Mafia, Aryan Brotherhood, etc., etc., etc. And these groups literally killed each other. Literally. I'm not speaking in figurative terms. And the prison authorities loved it. Think about it. They loved it. That way we kill each other. If people were just killing each other, they'd get danger pay, meaning the guards, okay? Plus, they'd be killing, they'd make sure that people were wiping each other out, keeping people disunited. So, blacks and Chicanos came up to me and said, Larry, you're not going to help this guy, are you? You're not gonna help him. I mean, he's a damn AB. He's AB, Aryan Brotherhood. And I said, you're damn right I'm going to help him. And they looked at me. I said, don't you get it? Don't you get it? Think about it. We're killing each other. Think about it. Whose benefit is that serving? Whose benefit? And I will say this. They all did respect me. They didn't agree with me, but they respected me because they knew I was a veteran of the Black Panther Party. All right? Mm-hmm. So I went to what was called Warden's Court, and in Warden's Court, this was in a California prison, Warden's Court, you could, a prisoner could defend another prisoner. And that's what I did. I defended the guy, and we won! To everybody's shock, we won, because I called witnesses, including guards, and played them off against each other. You know how they do with us? Well, that's what I did with them. And we won! It was so obvious that the charge was bogus against this guy. All right? So what did they do? They, meaning the prison warden and his henchmen, they threw me in solitary confinement, which I'd been in before. Okay, but that was a very big mistake on their part, because what happened? For the first time in many, many years in California history, the killing stopped in the prison, and all attention was focused on how dare you put that man in solitary confinement. So you had whites, blacks, browns, Asians, native people, all these brothers coming together. The prison authorities were in shock being
how did
shot.
The news get out? How did the news get out of the prison?
Well, we use a number of different ways to get it out. Let's just say it was done surreptitiously.
Great. What a great story. And did you become, what about the Aryan dude that you ended? Did he have a whole different attitude? He had to. I mean,
him. Everybody had a whole different attitude. They'd never seen anything like that before. I hadn't seen anything like that before, frankly. I mean, I knew that what I was doing was right. It was principle. That's the word. You know, Phil,
that
I
was
always
the common
that word.
Denominator.
Yes, okay?
So
all of us, it was a lesson to us all, to us all. And I can tell you that some years later, when I was finally released from prison, and it really didn't have anything to do, well, I won't say it didn't have anything to do with the United Nations ruling, when I was finally released from prison, I was walking down this huge hallway. It was a prison of approximately 3,000 prisoners, okay? I was walking down this hallway, and everybody knew I was going to be released. Okay, I was back in general population. I walked, there were whites on one side, whites and Chicanos on one side. There were natives and blacks on the other side. Now picture this, if you will. I'm walking down this hallway, and every single one of them put their arms in salute. That was unheard of. It was all I could do to keep the tears from flowing.
Mm-hmm.
It was awe, and the guards were just in shock. Okay?
Wow.
I know what can be done. I know what can be done. That's why I constantly say that we have to, our job is to get to everyday people just like us. Damn the leadership, because the leadership, they all serve the same master. You know,
yes.
That's our job. And if I could do that, and it was not just me, I don't like this I crap. If we could do that, if we could do it in that kind of situation, you know we can do it out here.
Absolutely.
You know,
Larry, you know what it says to me? Because you came from a place of truth and... you know, and you're in righteousness, really, and that's what we're on our side, because I honestly feel deep in my heart, if we try to get violent, and I'm sure people will, whatever, that's what they want, and then they can gun us down or whatever, but we have truth on our side, and I believe if we stick to that and change the narrative, which is what we've been talking about, because right now they run the narrative, but if we can come from this place of, you know, speaking our truth to power and come together as a people, because it is the oldest trick in the book with the, you know, right versus left. I call it right versus wrong. I don't care about, you know, right and left, Republican and Democrat. It's right or wrong as far as I can see. And that's the thing, if we can come together like that, I mean, it's such, your story is so beautiful. I mean, that is, it's poetic, it's amazing.
What we call the power of the people. In the party, we call that the power, that's the
power
true power
of
the people.
Yes, that's right.
There's
of the people.
One thing, though, I did want to interject. That was coming together around a principle. The principle was important more than the differences. And that was the common denominator. But I also want to say, and this hasn't been mentioned, that does not mean that the Aryan brothers and the Mexican mafia and the black groups all had to be friends.
Oh no, of course not.
See what I mean?
No.
And I think this is part of what keeps us divided out here, you know, with this Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, left, right, is I think a lot of people were programmed like, you know, if I work together with this fella around this issue, does that mean I'm going to have to give up my position on all these other things? Does that mean I'm going to have to be friends with this person? No. And like Larry, you often give the example about disagreeing. What's that saying you have?
If we are discussing something and we're always in agreement about every single thing, then somebody is lying.
Right.
And we don't want liars. We want thinking, critically thinking people. It's just that when we do disagree, let's do it in such a way that it cannot be exploited and used against us. That's all.
And just be real. Be honest. And that's when people, and that's when you can respect people.
Right.
When you right. allow them to, you know, when you're not selling yourself out and they're not selling themselves out either. And
right.
that allows, when we can be real and keep our own identity, you know, then I think we're free to work together. When we
right.
can realize we don't have to give that up. And
there's a saying that you agree to disagree. You know, it's
yes.
that's okay. People are going to disagree. That's what we're supposed to do. Otherwise, what are we?
Yes.
We're a bunch of zombies.
That's what makes us human.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
And if you disagree with something, you know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And that's what we've been doing all along as far as trying to stop these damn wars, as far as letting this tyranny advance to the point of a president openly saying, look, I got a kill list and I can kill Americans. And you got senators saying, you know, doing their showtime there saying, you know, is this legal or is it not? You know, I mean, we've got to that point and it's because of our own partisan, partisanship. And, I'm involved with the anti-war movement, the organized anti-war movement, and we had an anti-war candidate. We had a candidate for president that everybody knew would order a ceasefire to the wars if he had gotten in. It just so happened that he was running under the Republican. So anytime I would mention this fella and my concern was stopping the war. That's why I joined an anti-war organization to stop the war. I don't care about political party. Anytime this fellow was mentioned, immediately they'd find one thing wrong with him and say, we can't, you know, they'd find the one thing that they disagreed with, you know, well, we don't like him on women's rights or we don't like this guy on that. You know, what, and so you throw the baby out with the bathwater. You don't even talk about the possibility of what this guy might have to offer as far as stopping the war. And, you know, we've got to get past that, and it's not going to happen easy. So folks like Dan Johnson and people against the NDAA, pandaunited.org, these are folks that are doing it at the local level, and you got to crawl before you can walk. And I think that's as far as Tom's question
Let me I'd also like to address Tom's question.
Yes.
And I want to begin by a quote from Thomas Jefferson. That's right, the author of the Declaration of Independence. And notwithstanding Thomas Jefferson's faults, one of which was he was a slaveholder, notwithstanding that, the fact is Jefferson was absolutely correct when he said, and I quote, every generation needs a new revolution. Look it up.
Mm-hmm.
Every generation needs a new revolution. He was absolutely correct. We should think about that. Now, that was to preface my comment. With respect to what Tom had asked, you know, what can we do? What are some, and we've been talking about it. I would urge people to go, there's an article called The Need for a Sustained People's Consciousness Movement. Again, the name of the article is The Need for a Sustained People's Consciousness Movement. All right? You can find it on intrepidreport.com. You can find it on 107 Calgate. That's just like it sounds, 107 Calgate. That's from Ireland and Scotland. But read the article. It talks about what some of the things are that we can do to raise our consciousness together. And it can spread so quickly. Believe me, the corporate government knows this. But do we know this? They know this, all right? It can spread like a prairie fire, a cleansing prairie fire. Please check out the article, The Need for... Okay? So that's what that's... I just very quickly just wanted to say that to address what Tom, the great question or suggestion, rather, that he put forward to us.
Right. That's
well,
another
thank you, Larry.
Tool.
I'm calling in
thank
here.
You. Oh, hello.
Hi.
That sounds like a familiar voice.
Kathy in Florida calling in. And
hi.
I'm sitting here with, hi Larry, hi Phil, and hi Jill.
Hi.
I'm sitting here with my son Brett listening to the show, and I must
say, Brett.
It is a lively discussion, and it was so good to hear Tom, the first caller, and of course Janet. Christina.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Janet. I just had to call in because we're talking with Tom's question about remedies. But first of all, I just want to say to Jill, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. I can so identify with your story. I started out as a protester in Vietnam at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, Wisconsin. And very much against the Vietnam War, and my brother went to Vietnam, and he's back from Vietnam. He's 100% mentally disabled. My family was totally for the war. They were very German-American, very patriotic. Of course, they changed their mind after they saw what happened to my brother, but I was the protester, and it totally divided our family. I was... Yeah. Kind of called the communist of the family, which wasn't true, but that's how they referred to me. And I just want to say, too, what you said about the music back then. It was so wonderful the way the message was carried through the music. You know, we didn't have the internet or any of that, but we did, on the street corners, hand out pamphlets, get together in living rooms at the grassroots level, and it was just something else. I mean, it was... such a turbulent time, but I was so glad to be a part of it. And then I got moved to Florida. Well, I got married first in Wisconsin. That was short. But I got married in Florida, moved down here, and became like a soccer mom. And I, as you said, I guess I kind of went to sleep for a long time. But then in early 2000, I started slowly waking up again. And in 2005, well, 2004, I met up with Phil. And in 2005 became an activist once more, and I joined up with Code Pink, became this area's coordinator. Now I have disagreements with Code Pink once in a while, but I still stay in that activist group because it's just something I'm known around here as the Code Pink person. I show up when we have events in my pink, paint my own signs and all that. But what I wanted to say was our little group here that we have, well, Phil's on the corner with my son Brett every Thursday night handing out DVDs and flyers, trying to wake people up. And I come out usually when there's bigger events, and the group that we have that comes out usually is such a mixed bag. I certainly don't agree with and actually wouldn't want to be friends with some of these people, but I welcome them because we're all out there. We're unified with the same mission. We're against the wars. We're against the way things are going in this country, and we're unified in our event, and it's just wonderful. And I think I keep asking the same question as Tom. What can we do about it? There's not much I can say in the workforce. I've worked part-time. I'm in healthcare. And I'm in management-type position. I can't say too much there. But if anybody asks me, I'll tell them what I think about things. But I won't go too far into it at the workplace. But out in the community with the everyday people like we are, I think that's one of the remedies is to hand out information. The flyers are reminiscent of the 60s, I have to say. And Phil is so good about printing out these flyers. And of course, Brett and myself work at putting the packets together. But that's about all I had to say. I think this has been a wonderful show, just wonderful. I mean, Brett and I are, my voice is giving out, but we're wide awake. I loved listening to all of you, and of course Larry's prison story is, I was thinking when he was talking tonight, somebody should make a movie out of Larry's life.
That's what really? I was thinking. I was like, this is a great script.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Kathy, I said, who plays you? You know?
Really?
Exactly. Is it Denzel? I don't know.
Denzel Washington would be great. I mean, there's, yeah.
That's what's on my mind. Exactly. Great minds think alike, Janet.
There you go.
Yep. Artist.
Why not?
Artist. Yep.
Oh, we'll send him a letter.
Here go the women's.
Well, and it's for artists.
Oh, hey, you're blushing, dude. I can feel it.
Well, thank you for letting me talk here. I really enjoyed the show.
Thank you, Kathy. I was wondering if Brett might have something to say. Brett's been an activist. Brett Bracewell, here in Central Florida. We've been at it for... since 2005, we've been to New York City with Janet. We were on Air America with Chuck D.
Oh, my goodness.
That was after the big anti-war rally in April of 2006. Janet's friend Ed worked as the night engineer at the station. He got us on the, Kathy and I, on the radio with Chuck D. On the reel with Chuck D and Brett's with, Brett Bracewell is with We Are Change, the Florida chapter here. And We Are Change is another great example where people can get involved locally. There's chapters all over the country and, literally all over the world. And that's wearechange.org. And if you do a Google search, find the chapter in your own area. And these folks truly are, a great example of getting past this political partisanship and just going wherever the truth is going to take them. Did Brett want to say a couple words?
Well, I'm in the living room. He's out on the porch, and the volume is way up out there, so I can't take this phone out there. But I'm going to set the phone down and go out there and ask him.
Oh, great. I think you folks would, Larry knows Brett, Janet knows Brett, he's a wonderful guy. We have an article actually, I'll email it to you, Jill. It's, Central Floridians Remember WTC Building 7. And, the 9/11 anniversary in 2010, was Brett and I, they had a spotlight for the third beam that year. You know how there's always two beams of light for the world, the Twin Towers?
Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. People, you know, Building 7 came down as well that day, and we brought up the spotlights, and it was a covert operation, and I'll send you the article. It sounds like Brett is here now. Brett, are you there?
Yeah, Brett, just a minute. I'm going to pass the phone to Brett.
Because, okay, we're running short on time. Hello?
Hey, this is Brett.
Hang on a second. Hi. No, you're not running short of time. Take as much time as you need.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Dave. Hi, Brett.
This
Welcome
is Brett.
To the show. Welcome to the show, Brett.
I really enjoy listening to what everyone has to say. You and Larry and Jill and Janet. really tell it like it is.
That's for sure. And Brett, maybe you could tell the listeners what you do with We Are Change and our activist groups here in Daytona Beach, some of the things that we've done over the years that you think makes a difference. Do you have anything to say?
I've been at the corner with Phil for 7 years, I think it is, and we've been handing out all kinds of different DVDs to people that cover stuff that goes on that you're not going to hear on TV, usually 9/11 truth films. We've given out Obama deception DVDs before, which are also good.
That's
and
right.
Phil also has really great packets that he gives out to people with the DVDs in them. One of them is the brutal truth about 9/11 and not just the brutal truth about 9/11, but other stuff too, like chemtrails and the USS Liberty and the divide and conquer stuff.
Right.
With Obama finishing what George Bush started.
That's
and
right.
And the Federal Reserve, all kinds of great stuff in his packets.
And
we went to New York for the third beam. That was great.
And there was
he's done a lot of really great stuff.
That's right, Brett. And one thing about our corner, Brett, you know, Daytona Beach, and Larry, we've talked about this. Daytona Beach has a significant black population. And one of the things, you know, and Jill alluded to this in her article, that by putting Obama in, you know, that was really a good move, because you don't want to question the first black president. You know, you don't want to be called a racist, you know, and you don't want to. So they were able to get through a lot of stuff that Bush and the Republicans couldn't get through. And one of the things that we do, that corner that we stand on every Thursday night, is right on the line where the black neighborhood starts, and we're in contact with a lot of black folks over the years, and we're real with them, and they're real with us. You know, we're getting back to what we were talking about early. Just be who you are, and then people are free to listen to each other. And one of the things we've been handing out lately is a flyer on AFRICOM, and we explain to them, when we talk to them, we say, you know, we're in Africa right now, and Libya is in Africa, and Obama bombed the hell out of Libya in March of 2011, and ever since, we've got U.S. troops in Africa killing Africans. And we say flat out to them, I say, look, we've got African-American kids in the military being sent over to Africa to kill Africans. I said, we got to get real about this. And they listen to us, because we, you know, but just be who you are and speak the truth, and you'll be amazed that how people will listen, you know.
That's because, good.
Yeah, Brett will tell you. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Brett. Did anyone, you want to say anything else, buddy?
The only reason why Barack Obama is a lot more dangerous than George W. Bush is because we've got too many people not treating Barack Obama equal to George W. Bush.
That's true.
Too many people sucking up to Barack Obama because he's a Democrat makes him as dangerous as he is.
Boy, is that proven to be true. Did anyone else want to ask Brett or a question? Or
we have a caller from the 904 area. Caller from 904,
great.
Would you give us your name and the city you're calling from, please?
Thank you for calling, Brett.
You're welcome.
My bad.
Bad.
Hello.
Did we lose him?
Call him right back.
Oh, okay.
He's calling the caller. Calling the caller, folks.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Brett. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you, Phil. What a great
Hello?
Call
Hello?
I'm going to sign off. Thank you.
Your name and city you're calling from, please.
Hi, yeah, this is Tom Santoni calling from Hastings, Florida.
Oh, boy, you've got to hear this guy, Dave Corso. This is Tom Santoni, the fella that did what we all should have done. On the third day in office, Obama sent drones into Pakistan and killed a bunch of people. And Tom Santoni, a member of our Vets for chapter in Florida at that time, penned an article, Impeach Obama, and it's still on the internet. Tom, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Phil. How you doing?
Oh, great. You did what the rest of the anti-war movement should have done, and when we took your article to them, it was dismissed. And it's, Tom said in that article, this guy just committed the same crimes that we've been calling for the impeachment of Bush for 4 years or whatever it was. And I believe had we done what Tom stood up to do at that point in time, called for this war criminals impeachment, we wouldn't be where we are right now. But I'm talking instead of Tom. Tom, please say what you want to say, brother. Thank you for calling in.
You're welcome, Phil. I was only able to tune into your program about a half hour ago, and I just want to tell you that I am inspired by you people who continue to do the good work, and just, you know, hash it out every day in your own localities. Because I just see the whole situation as fairly hopeless, given the fact that we are, assaulted with new, assaults on our humanity and crimes against the environment. And I mean, just look at all three branches of our government right now. They're totally corrupt and out of whack. And, you know, I just don't see, things changing fast enough to prevent us from going off the cliff. But I did drop out of Veterans for Peace when Veterans for Peace, the leadership of the group decided not to sponsor the resolution to impeach Obama. But I did get involved in the Occupy movement when it was set up here in St. Augustine a couple of years ago, and we had some rallies and some meetings, but that kind of fizzled out also. So two things. One, I wanted to say thank you for your ongoing activism, and second, what do you guys think is the future for the Occupy movement, and is it helpful?
Good question. Jill, you've been probably the most involved with the Occupy and being there in New York City. You want to take that one?
Well, I mean, who can predict what's going to happen, with Occupy? But Chris Hedges says, Occupy is really a tactic, just like the Freedom Riders was a tactic. And it's just one part of what's going on, and that you never know what's going to shift something. It's like there's a book called The Tipping Point, and, things go on, but then there's this point where enough people know about it, and then it's like what Larry said, it's like a brush fire, and it just, all of a sudden, 70,000 people show up and things change. And I just have to believe that that's going to happen, because otherwise, I would be really, really depressed. I just keep thinking that things are evolving. Things are, it's cold in New York now. I mean, it's freezing. And so I think when the spring comes and the summer, I think there's going to be a lot more activities going on. And, who knows what the next thing will be. But I believe that it can change in the blink of an eye. I really do. And that it will be exposed. It'll be like the curtain will be pulled back on the Wizard of Oz, or the Emperor Has No Clothes or whatever, and people will realize it. And that's just what I have to believe is going to happen.
Well, that's the nature
and you're absolutely correct. Let us understand that the Occupy movement, I mean, that word movement is a very, very deep word. Movements are long and protracted affairs.
That's
have ups, they have downs, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And what we have seen of the Occupy, quote, movement is only a tiny, tiny beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's not dead. The corporate stream media would love to have us think it's dead, but it's not dead. How do you put out a prairie fire? Okay, and so clearly the Occupy movement, has begun in a way, and I kind of like the fact that it has a little lull, because people are preparing, they're studying, they're thinking, they're learning, they're growing, and then that time comes when they're out again in force, and this time it'll be much bigger than it was before, then you might have another lull. But they'll be out again in force, and it'll be bigger even than it was before. So, you know, I have the hope of a revolutionary. I have the hope and the faith of a revolutionary. I believe in the people. We must believe in the people. You know, but we have to make sure they're awake. And I go back to that. The Occupy movement is a part of an overall people's movement. This country is only one country on Mother Earth, on this precious, precious planet. One country, all right? But other countries around the world, and forget the national boundaries nonsense. I'm talking about the everyday people. They're waking up, and we, too, are waking up. So we must have the faith of the people's revolutionary or revolution, and it will happen. And as Thomas Jefferson said, and he was correct, every generation needs a new revolution.
Yes, and we haven't had one in a long time.
Right.
We're due.
I appreciate Jill's comment about the tipping point. I'm just wondering if that tipping point will happen before, what, this planet is no longer livable? And I also hear what Larry's saying about the hope of a revolutionary, and that we have to make sure that people are awake. But look at what happened in the build-up to the invasion and occupation of Iraq. There were tens of millions of people all over the world standing up against Bush's and Cheney's plans to invade Iraq. And what happened? We invaded Iraq. Trillions of dollars later, millions of lives later, where are we? I mean, are things any better today than they were 10 years ago? I mean,
no.
I see things as worse, personally. And I hate to be, Debbie Downer here, but I don't see things getting better even with all the work we've done over the years. You know, when I started protesting the Vietnam War back in the 60s, and spent a lifetime involved in activism to the point where it made me sick, because I was so active and so aware, and it just took all of my time, and I couldn't find the balance between enjoying this beautiful planet that Larry is talking about, and it's awesome. I mean, relationships and nature and all of that. But still, where are we today in relation to 10 years ago? Is it any better? I don't think so.
Well, Tom, I think it's both. I think it's both. I think it's both better and worse, okay? I really do. And I don't think you're being a downer. I, too, have been involved in the struggle and have lost very good friends, including family, who have been murdered by this government. Believe me, I'm trying to hold my anger back. Not anger at you, but my rage at this insidious, insipid government and what it does to its people of all colors, okay? But I think strongly and believe, based on what I see, that it's both better and worse. But I tell you what is definitely better, and that's the potential. We have, you know, kinetic energy, and we have potential energy. Right now, our potential is stronger, potential, I'm emphasizing, than ever before. But we have to turn that potential into kinetic. Can we do that, Tom? I don't know. But I have the faith of a revolutionary, and I'm not religious, but I'm going to quote something, okay? I'm spiritual, and I draw a difference between the two, okay? Mm-hmm. But there's a biblical quote where I believe it was Joshua who said, "As for me and my family, I will serve the Lord." I changed that last word from Lord to the people. "But as for me and mine, I shall serve the people to my dying breath." So, you know, I do believe that what you and I have fought for almost 50 years was well worth it. Because had we not, it would be even worse than it is today.
That makes sense. Makes sense to me.
I'd like to say something about the Occupy, Tom. Based on our experience with it here in the Daytona Beach area, and we had a very good Occupy Daytona Beach, which it served its purpose as far as getting people out of their houses and bringing them together where they're actually face to face and having coffee and having meetings. And now we have a weekly radio program that I believe it's over a year old now, Air Occupy on a local radio every Tuesday at 11. And we had groups that deal with homelessness. Other group deals with the foreclosure issue. It was a great thing, you know, and the camping out in the parks was temporary. The purpose was to have a gathering point for people so that they could get to know each other and then, work together taking on issues. My problem is, or what I'd like to see with the Occupy is to truly, live up to that 99% thing that they advertise. You know, because my experience is the Occupy is basically people from the left. And, here in Daytona Beach, we had the 9-12 groups, you know, which are like Tea Party groups, and they're against the Occupies. The Occupies are socialists, you know, and then the, people in the Occupy are calling the 9-12s tea baggers and, you know, right-wing crazies. It's still going on, you know, and to deny that's not being honest. And so what I'd like to see, and I see this again, I see this with this young man, Dan Johnson, and people against the NDAA. That's, what was it again, Jill? PandaUnited.org? And yes, what they're doing is they're taking the Occupy, they're being real about it. These are folks from the left. And they're going after the Tea Party groups and whatever, and they're bringing them together, they're developing this in different states, and we've got to make that effort and start bridging these gaps, because the people otherwise are still divided left and right. And but the thing that Tom mentioned about the tens of millions of people protesting Bush and Cheney's war on Iraq, you know, that did not include the Fox News Channel watchers. Okay? That did not include that day's version of the Tea Party folks. All right? It was still partisan. The anti-war people were the left, trying to stop the right from going to war. All right? Now, what we had when Tom Santoni, we had a very good opportunity at that point in time when Obama did the same damn thing, the Democrat did the same damn thing, and we on the left, the anti-war people, did not apply the same standard of a public call for impeachment. Anything short of that, in the eyes of the general public, not the choir, but in the eyes of the general public, is still partisan until you match the very same standard of that public call for impeachment. We still got partisanship here, and we still haven't matched it. We're still not there, and we're still at war, and we're still invading other countries. Thank you so much, Tom. Was there anything else you wanted to say?
I just wanted to thank you guys and to say that even though I'm not currently active in the political realm, I am active on the personal realm in nurturing kids along and learning music. You know, I may very well get involved again politically in my activism in the near future. But thank you all very much for your persistence in working toward positive change.
Thank you, Tom.
You're
thing,
welcome.
Tom has not deviated from principle. He left Veterans for Peace in protest. He stuck to principle. He did not compromise principle. And not only did we lose Tom, one of our great activists, we lost a number of other folks in our chapter too, because the leadership of Veterans for Peace and Code Pink and all these other groups, Chris Hedges himself has yet to get in front of a microphone like he did with Bush and say, call for impeachment. Chris Hedges has yet to do that. Cornel West, yes, Obama's a war criminal, but he still has not said what he said about Bush in front of a microphone. We need to impeach Obama. And the people that are not in the choir, the general public, sees this. They see this.
They see that the left is hypocritical
the bridge that will allow our fellow Americans to walk across until we match the same standard in the eyes of the general public. We are keeping that gate closed. We are keeping we've got to make the move, not them, because we set this precedent. We set the standard ourselves. That's why I'm so strong on this issue. Larry knows. I know I'm a broken record to so many people. But I really believe that's the case here as far as what's keeping us from coming together.
Well, people learn from repetition, Phil, so keep up the good work. You're fighting the good fight.
Right.
Thanks, Tom. Hey, where are we with time, Dave? Are we still on air, or...?
Take as much time as you need.
God bless you, man.
Good night, guys. Good night to you all.
Good night, Tom. Good night. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Good night, Tom. Yes. And let me say, I hope Tom still hears this. I want to veteran, and I'm talking political veteran. I want to thank you, Tom. I want to thank you, and I want to say to you that we are still struggling on behalf of the people. You mentioned that you're nurturing young folks, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? That's a revolutionary act. It is an important revolutionary act. So keep on doing that. You haven't left us. You couldn't if you wanted to, because it's in your heart.
We know that. Damn it, you're right.
Oh, boy. Well,
good night,
thank
Joe.
You. Thank
okay.
you, Tom.
Good night.
Good night.
Oh.
Well, how you all doing? we're still kicking here. Did we have any other calls, Dave, or anybody in the chat that wants to jump in?
No, when they sit there silent, they're listening. They're engrossed.
God bless them. Well, Jill, you've been a real treat to have on the program, and I've really enjoyed this time together. I know that we mentioned your book earlier in the program, Jill, and the name of your book is It Fascism Yet? And that's available on Amazon.com. Again, the author, our guest, Jill Dalton, JILLDALTON. The name of the book, Is It Fascism Yet? Did you want to say a few words about the book before we sign off tonight?
Well, one of the great things I think about the book is that I took
so many photographs of all the Occupy demonstrations, and they run throughout the book, and some photographs even before Occupy really came on the scene, but just you know, anti-war demonstrations or you know, whatever I happen to attend. And so that's one of the things I really like about the book. And also, it's you know, it's just sort of what I did is I took my first year of blogs that I wrote, and I put them in there, and I updated them all. So it really discusses it. It has the NDA in there. It has all kinds of information in there, and it's gotten really good reviews. It has like 5 stars.
Oh, that's great. And I think I was looking at the book description off the Amazon.com page, and it talks about when you, were 11 years old and your father, a highly decorated colonel in the U.S. Army who fought in 3 wars, went to, the Lincoln Memorial and, yeah. and read the Gettysburg Address. And, you know, so it sounds like you did you include some things in there about your relationship with your dad and disagreements and find where you did agree? And
yeah.
It said here, if I could read this, my father had a deep abiding love for this country, and he instilled that love in me. Although we were estranged for many years due to our opposing political views over the Vietnam War, I've come to understand we were both fighting for the same things, just from a different perspective. And boy, that's where, you know, again, that's where we've got to get as a people. And it sounds like it can be done. Did you want to share a little on that, Jill?
Well, it's just, you know, when you're young and you're a kid and you're just, you know, fighting the powers that be and your parents and everything else. And, you know, all these years later, when I look back and could see him for who he was, really, you know, I just realized that he gave me so much, you know. And it's like you said, you know, if we can work together. Because we were really fighting for the same things. It's just that we had different viewpoints on it. And,
yes.
You know, he was a man of great principle and honor. And, you know, he taught me a lot.
Mm. Well, I look forward to getting a copy of this book and reading it. Is It Fascism Yet? By Jill Dalton, who's been our guest tonight. What a wonderful guest. What a wonderful show it's been. Larry, would you like to say some closing thoughts here?
Yeah, well, thanks, co-host. I'm glad you still think of me. Let me say this. I want to thank you also, Jill. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you both. Thank you.
This is just the beginning. Just the beginning. And I also really, really want to thank all of our callers, each and every one of you, and all of the folks who wanted to call but were too engrossed, as Dave pointed out. I know you're right, Dave. They were just too engrossed and couldn't call because they had to hear every word. We want to thank our entire audience. We hope to be back with you again next month. And, you know, that's basically it. Please, please, folks, this is a long struggle. We're going to win. We're already winning. We can't expect the corporate stream media to highlight the fact that we're winning. We are winning. We're winning the hearts and minds of the people because we're slowly, steadily waking them up. So, you know, as we said in the Black Panther Party, all power to the people. All the people. Okay? Everyday, ordinary people. We're going to come together. We are coming together. It's tough. It's rough. But you know what? I wouldn't have it any other way.
That's right. Thank you, Larry. Okay, so here's the homework for everybody. Want you all to go to Jill Dalton's blog site, which is www.recoveringarmybrat.wordpress.com. Did I get that right, Jill?
You got it right.
Okay, www.recoveringarmybrat.wordpress.com. Get these articles circulated around to your friends and email lists. And when you're done with that, get over to www.blackactivistwg.org. Again, that's www.blackactivistwg.org, where you'll find Larry Pinckney's work. And get it circulated. Pass it on. And last but certainly not least is, Dave Corso and wolfspiritradio.com. Dave is the one who's been, providing us all these programs. And again, it's listener supported. So there is a donate button on wolfspiritradio.com. And if you want to continue to be the change you want to see and be part of this new media and speak truth to power, click that donate button and give what you can. And you might also want to look at the schedule at wolfspiritradio.com, where there's other, all kinds of other programs on the network. We're just one of them, and we're very happy to have the opportunity to part of this network. So I think that's enough homework for tonight, huh, Larry?
We'll have more next month.
But okay, and like Larry
and
said,
the exam will be the end of April.
There you go.
All right.
And Dave Corso, we can't thank you enough, Dave, for
Thanks,
putting this show on for us and the listeners, and I want to say good night and thank you very much.
Well, I'm just honored that you gentlemen accepted my invitation.
It's a pleasure.
And Jill, thank you so very much.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
A song that I haven't played in a while called "We Cannot Be Silent."
Hey.
All right.
Until tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. when I'll be back here live. This is Dave once again from the Wolves Den saying good night, Larry. Good night.
Good night,
Joe.
Dave.
Good night.
Joe.
Good night, Dave.
Good night, Dave.